You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. My name is Corazon. Now it's time for Zine. We're doing an outside broadcast from the University of Melbourne. Joining me is international Zine correspondent Luke Sinclair. Hello, Luke.
Hello, Cora.
We have a very special guest on our program today.
We do. Our very special guest is Paul Long, who is a professor in creative and cultural industries at Monash University. Paul is working on a project called Mapping Australian Homemade Amateur and Do-It-Yourself Cultural Economies, and he's here at the TASA conference today, the Australian Sociological Association conference, where we are broadcasting live.
Hello, Paul.
Hi. And we're also joined by a cast of thousands.
We are joined by many students here making zines at the moment. What we like to do is begin the program with Luke's personal definition of a zine.
So a zine is an independent publication. A zine is a small handmade magazine. A zine is usually made by an individual or a small group of individuals, and a zine usually sells for a low shelf price or is free. A zine maker always has full creative control of their zine. A zine is often photocopied. A zine is often stapled. A zine is always made for love and not for profit. And a zine can break one or all of these rules and still be a zine.
Paul, what do you think of that definition?
It's pretty all-encompassing. It's all-encompassing. I like the fact that it lays down the law and then breaks it completely. It'd be good to see whether the zines that people have made today adhere to and break those rules.
Paul, could you tell us a little bit about why you invited us to come and do this workshop here today?
I think it was my colleague Ash who invited you. He's a member of TASA. The Sociological Conference takes place every year, and it's a fitting place for our contribution in our project, which is investigating different aspects of what we call HARDI, your acronym, homemade, amateur, a word that not everyone likes, DIY particularly. And as you've been finding out, sociology is a very broad discipline. And for those of us interested in creative and cultural sociology, aspects of everyday creativity bring us together in our project. But we also found lots of colleagues who are in this space too. So we ran our own panel in which colleagues from our project and others across other projects spoke about all these different aspects of creativity and some of the challenges of DIY in contemporary Australia. And then as an adjunct to that, Ash proposed that we run a zining workshop, partly because it's quite nice to be at a conference where we get a chance to do something creative and find ways of expressing ideas about the research we do, as well as other aspects of what we do in as we follow here, according to these special rules that I'm sure sociologists sort of made sure that they followed to the letter. So it's a great chance over 2, 3, 4 hours to bring colleagues together, many of whom turned up at 9 o'clock, others have come in and out over the period to come and make their own mini zine, or we invited people maybe to make a page and contribute ideas about their contributions to the conference as well. So anything goes, really.
How broad is the range of things you've been looking at in terms of do-it-yourself culture? So we're looking at zines today, there's music, but how deep have you kind of been looking?
Well, because I think the range of what we call of everyday creativity in DIY encompasses all aspects of culture, we've had to be pretty selective about taking a sample. So I've been investigating personally, going out and investigating local creative community art groups, as well as in self-taught artists. We have a colleague at Monash who is also a poet himself, and a zine maker, who started going out to look at stand-up poetry in Melbourne and has been also engaging with creative writing groups. We have a colleague who is a musician also, who went out and has been engaging with ukulele groups, which also blossomed during COVID, oddly. I think we've talked about COVID at the conference today. And our colleagues Ash and Meroz are encompassing a broader range of things by looking at festivals across Australia, particularly around those fringe and independent festivals where we find such an array of practitioners from, you know, doing music or literature or theatre or dance or things you can't even put a label on. mm-hmm. that they may not be they may not themselves be professionals. So in a way, following your rules about zining, Luke, there's a degree to which once we start to put our finger on it, the boundaries blur about what we do locate as everyday creativity, but we've tried to be precise just to get a sample of what's out there.
It's just so incredible hearing about theatre, hearing about dance, hearing about literature. How do you actually find these people? How do you meet them? And how do they respond when the university comes knocking about their exciting home-based practice?
Yeah, that's always the challenge. I mean, I've been trying to scope out this before I began researching it on the project, partly because I'm just interested, and it's a good way of getting involved in everyday creativity for your own sanity. And I don't know about the rest of Australia particularly, but Melbourne is a real DIY place. So there are lots of institutions that I think, even if you don't know what they are, a bit of interest leads you into Sticky Institute or the Melbourne Camera Club or the Embroiderers Guild of Victoria or, you know, Mentone Art Group. You know, there's a lot of it out there. Some of it's not so obvious. You have to dig a bit deeper and hopefully rely upon people's willingness to respond to us putting out the call. We have an Instagram and places like that. We send emails out, hopefully, to people who've spotted online or we're introduced to. So, I mean, again, if you follow research on everyday creativity, Creative Australia claim that 45% of Aussies are involved in creative production. So you could probably run into a crowd and bump into two or three creatives on that figure alone.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is Zine.
We're broadcasting live from the TAZA conference at the University of Melbourne, joined by Paul Long, and we're also joined by Merrose Borthwick, who is one of the researchers on the Mapping Australian Homemade Amateur and Do-It-Yourself Cultural Economies project. Merrose, what's your position? What have you been doing as part of this project?
Yeah, I've actually got a fabulous position with the with this project, that I go to arts festivals, independent arts festivals, go and sort of enjoy the atmosphere of those places, meet people, and then invite some of the people who are involved to be interviewed.
So what are some of the zine-related festivals that you've been to?
I've just been to the Otherworlds Zine Fair in Sydney, which was, an amazing, buzzy day.
Was it similar to what you expected the zine fair would be like?
Actually, you know, I kind of think it was a little bit more than I thought it would be in terms of, I guess what I would say, the sort of the community feel and the sort of supportiveness around the creative practice of zining. I didn't really understand until I was there what that really might look like in practice, but yeah, it was great.
So I'm curious about why zines made it into this particular research project.
I can give you an origin story, which is for me coming to Melbourne still relatively recently, although 6 years now, the discovery of the Festival of the Photocopier and Sticky Institute and the prodigious amount of zining was just quite overwhelming. And of course, it's a conduit to learning about a lot of other creative work as well. But zining seems to be a baseline to think about easy access to doing creative work and learning about people who do creativity, right? Because zines are so varied. People who draw, people who write, people who stick garbage on the front of a piece of paper or, you know, share an old piece of toast as a zine or a jam jar. That's, I think, the kickoff point. And I think it's a theme that runs through lots of other practices.
So this whole project actually began with zines?
For me, it was partly prompted by seeing how enormous the zine scene was. And by enormous, I don't mean that people are necessarily, I think we heard this earlier, an individual doesn't have to produce 10,000 copies of a zine, but there were 10,000 people doing one or two copies of their zines. That seems to me to be quite important because that's an enormous variety of creativity. And they're all attached, not all of them, some of them are attached to music or, as we heard, festivals, sharing, community activity, painting, whatever. So one thing leads to another, and it's a big web of really interesting activity. Can make sense of.
So what do you do as an academic after you go to this huge festival? There's all this stuff happening. There's all these people. There's all these zines. You then go home on the evening, and what do you do with all this information?
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, when I'm at the festival, I'm just really trying to take in all sorts of aspects of what's happening, who's in the room, how are people interacting, what is the kind of the materials being used, how are people actually interacting with things and picking up things and looking at them and engaging. Sort of so many things to do with just the kind of like how the space is organized, etc. And generally what I try and do is actually write all of that down, just like almost is in a kind of a stream of consciousness type way, just like every single little bit of the texture that I can remember about what I've seen, I try and capture that. And then that's really, really useful material, particularly for when I'm interviewing people afterwards, so that I've got kind of like an idea of some of the things that I might think would be interesting avenues to follow up on.
What is an example of an interesting avenue that you've followed up on?
It's actually really funny. So many people, I was actually laughing about this afterwards with Ash, who's also on the team. So many people mentioned the Rizzo prints. Like they would say, oh, you know, look, it's a Rizzo print thing. I had no idea what they were talking about at the time. Like I could see that these were these really beautiful objects, printed objects, but I didn't understand what it was. But I was like, what is this, you know? And so actually then it became something really fun to talk to people about and interesting to talk to people about kind of like what that meant. And I learned from a lot of, you know, some of the people that I ended up interviewing had their own. Other people had been to workshops where they'd gotten to, you know, use a Rizzo printer. So that was really interesting to sort of think about, like, the difference between people who are maybe just sort of doing something by hand to that sort of next level, I guess, in some sense of using the Rizzo.
Yeah. You've got a zine that you've made today at this workshop. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I'm really interested in craft, and so I've kind of like used the idea of craft, trying to think about craft textures and craft processes within the zine itself. So it was a good exercise. I mean, it's an interesting, you know, whenever you're doing something creative, you often feel that sense of like, you know, does this have a purpose? You know, is it good enough, etc.? And I, you know, going through the process of making the zine, I'm already like going through that sort of like I have to fight myself, you know, suppress that feeling and just let it flow. And I found that as I kept going, it, yeah, got better and better.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is Zine.
We're broadcasting live from the University of Melbourne at the TAZA conference today. And we are joined by Dorinda T. Hart from the University of Western Australia, where she is a researcher and was a participant in the zine workshop here at the university today. Dorinda, can you tell us a little bit about the zine you made?
Yeah, sure I can. I must say I really enjoyed the process. And my research interest is kind of in families and mothers. And so I tried to do a zine which sort of looked at being a mother in a house, right? And then kind of, but also that, like, because I'm at a sociology conference and I am a sociologist, just thinking about that sociology actually needs to bring it out of the four walls of the house.
How did you find working through the zine and helping you to tell the story? Did you find that a useful exercise to make a zine?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the process. I must say that, like, in my regular work, I actually don't do a lot of arts and crafts. I'm in the public health space, which is very much statistics and, you know, everything has to be lined up and, you know, we'd like to have control over things. So this process is actually very different. It's really quite uncontrolled. Like, you know, you've got all your scraps of paper everywhere and you've got that feeling of chaos at the beginning and you got to sort of sit with that and be okay with that, which I actually really quite enjoy. I'm always actually really amazed that it's in a sense, it's like with any project, how you go from that stage of chaos and then it comes together and you go, oh, actually, this looks really quite good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I really enjoyed about your zine was just the way you walked through, starting with the picture on the front. You've got this beautiful front door, and yet as you travel through your zine, you can see that actually there might be some issues within the home. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so obviously, and also like there's a very personal, private nature to that. Like, you know, sometimes the difficulties that you're experiencing, particularly as mothers, and what I feel quite strongly about is that we pay a lot of attention to mothers when they've got babies or toddlers, right? And we, you know, we've got all these beautiful pictures as well. Usually if we think mothers, that's the image we have, but we kind of forget about the mothers who have teenagers, and then particularly when the teenagers have difficulties, go through mental health difficulties or any health concern or whatever it might be. And we forget to support the mums. We think about supporting the teenagers or the young people, but we forget about supporting the mothers. And so I really want to think about the supports for mothers. And that's where, like I say, the sociology brings it out of that personal experience and really makes it about what can we do to support them.
What was particularly wonderful about the way you made your zine was intuitively finding pieces that you could add to it. And you came across some wording that was applied to a residential...
Architecture, I think it was.
An architecture magazine. Tell us a bit about that.
It was just the three words, beyond four walls, and I cut it out. And then when I separated it from the architecture section, of course, then it like got on a different meaning. And it fit really what I was trying to say about what I think sociology needs to do.
The zine format's been quite a useful process for you.
Absolutely, exactly.
I think a mother's group or a parent group is very similar to a zine workshop already. Like you've basically got an ideal situation for a zine workshop where you've got a group of people who are together, you bring out some collage materials, you could have a whole zine fair of mother-based zines produced in that environment, and it would be a really healthy situation to be making those zines.
I actually joined this workshop because I wanted to experience it myself so that perhaps I can exactly use that, you know, with, say, mothers that I'm researching with.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is Zine.
We're joined by Jo Taylor, who is a PhD candidate from Deakin University, who's been participating in the zine workshop here at the TAZA conference at the University of Melbourne today. Jo, tell us about this zine you have made in the workshop today.
Well, I'm still making it. I haven't finished it yet. I'm making a little zine with lots of images. My art, my research is on art and connections to spirituality and nature, and I'm using art space research as some of my methods. So I've just completed what's called a confirmation of candidature document. So it's like the end of my first year of the PhD, and I've just pulled together what I'm going to be studying and what it's all about. And what I'm finding is doing this zine, particularly at this moment, is really helping me kind of visualize that and think about it in new ways and think about how I can communicate it in different ways as well. So it's really exciting for me.
And this is your first zine that you've made?
Yeah, absolutely, which is a surprise because I've wanted to make a zine for ages and I don't know why I never have, but now I have.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay. Well, so at the start, I haven't used many words yet, right? So the prompts you gave me, like the first one was like, which area of sociology are we in? So I've got an image here, which is just kind of an abstract image. I've used a real leaf, actually, which is sort of representing for me spirituality, just like this glowing yellow image. And then you asked the second prompt was like, when did I become interested in this? So I was trying to express that, like, this has always been an interest of me and it really of mine, and it really comes from a sense of connection with country. So I've got some images there of some beautiful natural places that remind me of places that I've lived and known. I got the words climate issue and stuck them in out of a magazine because it is also connected to what are we going to do about this. And this is my favourite page because when I was waiting for the bus this morning, I found a perfect C-shaped leaf and I've stuck that into the middle spread as the C for the word creativity, and I've written the word creativity there and got someone's very beautiful art that I've repurposed as it's like trees and their reflections and beautiful colours. So I've got that in a bit of a leaf shape. So, yeah. And then I've got some mushrooms and stuff. That end page is about relationality, because you asked me, Cora, what one of the final prompt was, what have I learnt so far? And that really comes back to learning about Indigenous relationality. And also, like, there's lots of really cool research about, like, mushrooms and mycelium and post-humanism. So I've got some nice mushroom images and some little basketry images, and found a really cool little image of, like, tree roots with the word systems change on it, which really works. So, yeah. And I put some fabric on it, which I like. Got a nice tactile feel. Yeah, I love turning paper into fabric.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Paul, I'm just going to bring you in for a second here. Sure. This is something that you were hoping that people would approach academic work in a more creative way. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, if I talk about it from within the project, one of the aspects that we wish to pursue is to do creative contributions to the engagements with the people we go and meet. So my colleague who's studying ukulele orchestras, for instance, he's the group he's connected with have asked him to join and play. Obviously, we do zining. We've done some zining with you. And I think zining is an expression both of what we find out, but also learning how to do it is pretty important. I've been going around art groups, and I'm pretty kind of eager to go and join one. But again, it's interesting about the time you have to commit to do something properly, and not to denigrate zines, but you've shown us today you can do it pretty quickly and you can do a lot of it, but you still have to commit to it. So I think for us as academics, thinking about how we express ourselves creatively, not just in the formal academic scientific paper, is quite useful. There's useful ways of connecting with others, but also learning about our own ideas, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, and how to communicate. But also I think we have to fulfil our own creativity, just as others are doing through zining and other projects. And I think you've just expressed it well, Joe, that you can connect, and also in the previous presentation, you can connect the big picture with a lot of the personal perspectives too, which also matters, I think.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is Zine.
We're joined by Ash Watson, who is from the University of New South Wales, where they are a senior lecturer. Ash is one of the people who has instigated this session here at the TARZA conference today and has made two zines as part of this zine workshop. Ash, just wanted to ask, how did this whole situation come to be?
Well, I'm a long-time zine maker, enormous zine fan, so any opportunity I have now to bring zine making into every aspect of my academic career, I embrace with both hands. I've done a couple of smaller zine things at the TARZA Festival a couple of years ago, especially around the postgraduate day, which brings current students together to do some professional development and meet each other and establish a bit of a community of around other people across the country. And they've had a couple of zine sessions in the past, but a little bit smaller scale. And I thought this would be a great opportunity, being in Melbourne, knowing the great work that both of you do, and being able to have the amazing, you know, library of Sticky Institute be able to come along as well and do it on a bit bigger of a scale and more open to people who are here at the TARZA conference.
So what kind of zines have you made in the past?
Yeah, I dabbled a bit as a teenager making a lot of like angry feminist rage zines about how awful it is to live in the suburbs. But then kind of about 10 years ago, really rediscovered them and re-embraced them. And a lot of the zine making I do now actually is all of the stuff that overflows my research, and I don't know what else to do with it. All of these ideas and feelings and things that I keep thinking about that I can't find a good home for in the kind of more normal traditional academic research I do. So I find it such a great creative outlet to express myself, to think in creative ways, to, I don't know, just like put stuff out into the world. I find the DIY ethos of zine making just so powerful and transformative for myself. I made two zines today in the session. I've followed Cora's great prompts to have a think about kind of what my research is at the moment and what brought me to it and what I've learned. And from that made a pure collage zine, actually. And I went totally led by the materials at hand and have made a heap of just very bright, random collages in response in one of my zines, the front of which is like a moon with a bit of a starry background covered in a draped, very red and brightly coloured curtain, and then a heap of gems or stones covered across the top of it. So it's very abstract. The other zine that I've done is it's about the importance of public libraries today. It's a much simpler zine. There's a little bit of handwritten text on each page and a bit of a border that I've cut out from a copy of The New Yorker, I think it was, that's provided a little kind of cut-off word edge border to each of the pages. And on the front page, it reads, "The future is the public library," and the back page reads, "The public library is the future." We were talking a bit about this in the workshop today because of the awful news coming out of the State Library of Victoria and the kind of terrible management decisions and cuts happening there. A lot of my research at the moment focuses on the social impacts of digital technologies, and libraries are so important in this space. It is so short-sighted to not be understanding how important they are as civic cultural infrastructure. So I've made a ranty, angry zine about why public libraries matter.
I want to ask, with all the zines you've made over the years, where are they now? Do you keep the original cells? Do you keep multiples of each zine?
Yeah, it really depends on the zine. The biggest project that I've run over the longest period of time is called SoFi Zine, which stands for Sociological Fiction Zine. I made the first copy of this when I was a PhD student in London back in 2017, and I thought I'd only make a one-off. And I opened it out to anybody who kind of saw my call on Twitter at the time who was a sociologist to send me a short piece of fiction so I could put it in the zine, because I know there are heaps of secret artists and writers at sociology conferences. So I thought this would be a great way to bring all those people together and like have a one-off magical little collection. There was so much interest in it, I've continued to make it. I'm currently putting together the 18th edition of the zine. I make it kind of first and foremost as a physical zine, but I do digitize it, so it's totally free for anybody to read online. It's at sofizine.com. So that I have a much more kind of archival approach to. I try and keep it as a real lively online record, and I usually just print out heaps of copies and like send them around to people, or, you know, leave them in public spaces. Some of the other zines that I make, I'm sure I've lost the original copies of them. They're just kind of ephemeral that disappear out into the world. I'm also a huge zine collector. I think my office at the moment at work, I must have over 1,000 zines in it. Some of it displayed in a beautiful library with a little armchair who would, when they come into my office, they sit there and they can read them all, and heaps more just in boxes that I physically don't have the space to display.
I'm interested in your collection then. So what makes you choose one zine to add to your collection?
Oh, such a good and difficult question to answer. It's totally vibe-based. I love a really big range of them. Like if I go to something like Other Worlds or even when I come into Sticky Institute, I just like kind of walk around and randomly select. It's like I almost close my eyes and my magic hand will just pick something. And I'm drawn to things that are really weird. I'm drawn to things that are really, I love really small zines or zines that have like an experimental material to them. One of my favorite zines is one of Luke's zines that has like a plastic fork sticky taped to the cover of it. So I love things that are a bit weird. I love things that are a bit beautiful. I really love confessional purr zines that are just such like stream of consciousness, this kind of awful or beautiful or traumatic or crazy thing is happening to me, or this completely mundane day happened to me. I love all kinds of zines. If I could have them all and keep them all, I would.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1, and we are broadcasting live from the University of Melbourne.
Big thank you to Ash Watson and Paul Long and everyone who took part in the zine workshop here today. So good to see so many zines made and just so much kind of conversation around what people are making and what it means to them.
Yeah, I really particularly love the fact that there was a number of people who made their first zine today in this workshop. Thank you guys so much, and I hope you all had a great time. If you've got any final comments?
Then just thanks so much for being here. We're such fans of the radio show. We're such fans of Sticky Institute, of zine making. It's a big part of our project, so it's lovely to be here and talk about it.
And if people would like to find out more about the project?
You can follow us on Instagram. We're at Hardy Creative, which is HADIY.creative on Instagram.
Follow us and communicate.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful, a wonderful experience here, hasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, it's been a great morning. Love doing a big, long zine workshop. We've been here since 9 and we're wrapping up now. So a good 4 hours of zine making here at the University of Melbourne today.
It's been fantastic. Thanks again.
Thank you.